greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Ritalin when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only upon the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of the entire population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Now, today, of course, the fears of the early opponents of the income tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term in office, the top tax rate had jumped from 7 to 60%. And by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, in 1945, the top tax rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time in our history. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man. This year, the average American family had to work through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves, bond servants. Now, what does that make us today? Now, the income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments, and they violate eight statutes of the old Mosaic Law Covenant, including our English common law today. The income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask this question: do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? If you'd like more information about tax and status, then call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative, and free. Our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about Ritalin, and last time we were talking about the side effects of Ritalin. Now, there's 35 side effects. One of the side effects is called growth retardation. A child might lose several inches in possible height, though if treatment is stopped, there is generally a growth spurt. And it's perhaps worth mentioning here, at least my view, that if a drug is powerful enough to retard a child's growth, it doesn't seem entirely unreasonable to my mind to suspect that the chances may be very high that this drug may be having other powerful effects upon and within that child's body. If it can stunt his growth, what else can it do? Now, doctors are also being warned that they should be careful and that they should carefully supervise the drug withdrawal, since depression as well as renewed overactivity can be unmasked. Long-term follow-up may be needed for some patients. Now, if you'll remember last time, I read a paragraph out of this report that says the company that sells Ritalin, the manufacturer of Ritalin, Novartis, the company selling it claims that although available clinical evidence indicates that treatment with Ritalin during childhood does not, I want to underline, does not increase the likelihood of addiction. All right, so the drug manufacturer assures you, ladies, your child will not become an addict. There's no fear of addiction. Now, here's the same report. And doctors are also warned that careful supervision is required during drug withdrawal. Let me underline drug withdrawal. Well, maybe I didn't understand something here, but isn't drug withdrawal associated with drug addiction? I mean, if you weren't addicted, well, then there wouldn't be any withdrawal, would there? But if you're dependent psychologically or physically upon a drug, a food, or some chemical, you know, like, let's take cigarettes, for example. I mentioned this to you last time. I used to smoke. I was addicted to cigarettes. I couldn't live without cigarettes. I used to worry and fret when I got down to my last three cigarettes in the package and the carton was empty up in my room. I mean, I'd be in a panic. If I ran out of cigarettes, you know, then the first guy that come, hey, Bob, you got a weed? Bob, you got a cigarette? So I'm here to tell you that old George Gordon here was addicted to cigarettes, addicted to nicotine. And I had withdrawal symptoms from that. Now, it looks like to me that when the pharmaceutical company warns doctors that there's drug withdrawal, and then that same company says, but there's no addiction, sounds like the virgin whore syndrome to me. Virgin whore syndrome. That's what that sounds like to me. Now, remember that there have also been reports that children have committed suicide after drug withdrawal. So we have reports of children who have committed suicide after they have been withdrawn from Ritalin. And one study has shown that children who are treated with stimulants alone had higher arrest records and were more likely to be institutionalized. Long-term use of Ritalin has been said to cause irritability and hyperactivity. Excuse me, I'm going to underline irritability and hyperactivity. Didn't we give this kid Ritalin because he was hyperactive? And so now you've calmed this guy down. So you put him on Ritalin and you calmed him down, but if you take him off Ritalin, it will cause hyperactivity, which is the very malady that you put him on the stuff for in the first place. Wasn't it? Which then raises another issue. It says, is this stuff really worth what we're paying for? Does it work? And the answer is no, it doesn't. No. And we've seen already in the report that no, it doesn't work. It makes a lot of money. It makes a lot of money for doctors. It's a great aid to teachers and social workers. It gives parents who have unruly children an excuse for their unruly children. Well, my kid's hyperactive, and that's why I've got him on drugs. Because nobody wants to admit, I don't know how to train my child up in the way he should go. I don't know how to be a parent. I don't know how to teach in school. And as a social worker over here, I haven't got a clue as to why these children behave as poorly as they do. And boys and girls, it's two causes here. It's nutritional deficiency, number one, and it's a lack of discipline, number two. Those are your two causes for this ADHD. Now, the truth of the matter is that this definition or this diagnosis of ADHD is about as loose as a goose. It is so vague and it is so general that it doesn't have any real meaning behind it. And every kid in the world who suffers from these symptoms, lack of attentiveness. Hell, all kids have lack of attentiveness. Hell, I'm an old man and I've got lack of attentiveness. Except in old people, they call it Alzheimer's disease. In children, they call it ADHD. Anything to sell us drugs. Sell us drugs for Alzheimer's, sell us drugs for inattentiveness. And Americans buy into that. See, Americans like drugs. This is a nation of drug addicts. And the average person, 65 years old and older, is taking 6 drugs. Now, if that isn't drug addiction, what is? What is drug addiction if you're taking 6 drugs? Well, I would say that if you're taking 0 drugs, you're not addicted to drugs. If you're taking 1 drug, how regularly do you take it? Are you psychologically addicted to the drug, or is it a physical as well as a psychological, or is it just physical and not psychological? You know, I'm not an expert. I'm just saying, ask yourself. You know, you're the guy receiving the report. Now, remember, this irritability and hyperactivity are, if you will remember, the problems for which this drug has been prescribed in the first place. In the study published in the Psychiatric Research and entitled Cortical Atrophy in Young Adults with a History of Hyperactivity, brain atrophy was reported in more than half of 24 adults treated with psychostimulants. Let me underline that. They took 24 people over here, that are adults, that had been on Ritalin. And they discovered that half of the 24, that's 12 out of 24, suffered from brain atrophy. Brain atrophy. Now, muscle atrophy is, you know, if you don't use your muscles, you know, they become useless and then you can't use them anymore. Brain atrophy. Well, isn't that kind of like Alzheimer's disease or Jacobs Creutzfeldt disease, where your brain just kind of turns to mush or jelly and disintegrates? Isn't that what we're talking about? Now, they assure us that this drug is safe. I mean, you know, the manufacturer doesn't come out and say, we'd like to sell you Ritalin. This is cocaine, it's highly addictive, and it causes brain atrophy and 35 other side effects, including weight loss and stunted growth. Wouldn't you like to buy a bottle today? And remember our case discount in 12 bottles or more. You know, you people probably as dumb as you are wouldn't buy it if we told you the truth about it. So they don't tell you the truth. They come out and they tell you it's not addictive. They tell you it's perfectly safe. And then they warn the doctor there's 35 side effects over here. Teachers and social workers are at the head of the list to prescribe it. And they say, if your kid is gullible and easily led, he's probably got ADHD. Excuse me, the kid's not lining up over here at the nurse's office at the local school saying, oh my God, I'm hyperactive, please give me Ritalin. It's you parents out there that are forcing the Ritalin on the children. The kid isn't going down to the Joe on the street corner saying, oh my God, Joe, here's $5, give me a Ritalin pill. Your kid is taking his Ritalin pill and he's selling it to other kids on the school ground for $5, and he takes the $5 and goes out and spends it on something more intelligent. Ritalin is one of those street drugs that's being sold illicitly, on the school grounds. And so even if your kid isn't on Ritalin officially, he's probably on Ritalin unofficially because he's buying it on the school grounds from the kids that it is prescribed to. And this is all being done at the behest of the teachers in the school and the school nurses and the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies and indeed your legislature and your government and now by you, mom and dad, and you're right in there with them. And I'm just a reporter, and I came along and raised the issue. I said, are you really sure you want to do that? Honest to God, are you really sure you want to give your kid cocaine with these side effects, with this report? And this is just the tip of the iceberg. I haven't got to the really good stuff yet. Brain atrophy was reported in more than half of 24 adults treated with psychostimulants, though I don't think anyone can say for sure whether or not the psychostimulants caused this brain atrophy. The possible link should make prescribers and teachers and parents who are fans of Ritalin stop and think, though, for a moment, shouldn't it? You know, we can't say that, well, my God, you know, these people were on Ritalin, they suffer from brain atrophy probably caused by the Ritalin. Don't you think you ought to look into it? Isn't that a clue that says, that's interesting. I don't want my brain to atrophy, and I don't want my child's brain to atrophy. I'm not really mad at my kid. I don't want to harm my child. That's why I don't give them drugs. In Johannesburg, a study of 14 children is said to have produced a response in only 2 children. Got that? They gave this Ritalin to 14 kids over there, and 2 of them responded favorably to the treatment. 12 of them didn't respond favorably at all. Well, then what in the hell do you want to give them the Ritalin for? Maybe they need a drug, but maybe it isn't Ritalin. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's Alka-Seltzer that they need instead of cocaine. You ever think about that? The final insult is surely the fact that the company that sells Ritalin tells doctors that data on safety and efficacy of long-term use of Ritalin are not complete. For this reason, they recommend that patients requiring long-term therapy with Ritalin should be monitored carefully with periodic, complete, and differential blood counts and platelet counts. Your kid's on Ritalin, he ought to be checked and monitored by a doctor constantly to see whether or not this Ritalin is causing any of these 35 side effects. Now, I regard this as an insult because Ritalin is not a new drug. This Ritalin's been around since at least 1961. Now, we don't know when it was developed. I don't know if it's, hell, it might be 50 years or 75 or 100 years old. I don't know. But we traced it back to 1961. And see, that's 71, 81, 91, 100, one's 40 years, and this is 06. Isn't that 45 years? And in 45 years, we can't say that this Ritalin works or doesn't work for the treatment that we're intending. Now, if you people are out there going to a party, and for some reason you're unable to get some cocaine, well, hell, just go in and get your kid's Ritalin prescription. Go to the party, pull the capsules apart, you know, smash up the pills and snort the stuff direct. What the hell difference does it make whether you bought it from Joe down on the street corner or used your kid's Ritalin bottle? It's the same stuff. Isn't that just real special? But instead of your kid snorting it, he's ingesting it. He's taking it in a capsule with some water. I have not, at the time of writing this, been able to find out exactly when Ritalin was first introduced, but I have been able to trace it back to 1961. Now, maybe I'm being rather demanding, but it does seem to me that when a drug has been on the market for a quarter of a century or more, it isn't entirely unreasonable for the drug company involved to have completed its study and the studying of the data on whether or not it works and is safe. Now, here's cancer in mice. Oh, yeah, here comes cancer raising its ugly head. When early safety tests were done on mice, researchers found that the drug caused an increase in cancer in male mice only, an increase in cancer described as relatively rare rodent malignant tumor type. The significance of these results to humans is totally unknown, says Novartis, the company selling Ritalin. So they tested it in mice, and they discovered that the male mice come up with cancer tumors. And then the Novartis comes back and they say, well, but we don't know if this has any effect on humans or not. My God, we've been at this for 45 years, but we don't know. Now here once again is yet more proof of the total worthlessness of animal experiments and the ruthless and cynical attitude shown by the drug companies and those government departments and agencies which allegedly exist to protect the public from these unsafe drugs. Now I have frequently argued that when drug companies perform preclinical tests on animals, they do so knowing that if the tests show that a drug does not cause any problems when the drug is given to animals, they can use those results to help convince the authorities that the drug is safe and effective. But on the other hand, if a drug does cause problems in animal testing and the animals die or have serious side effects, when the drug is given to the animals, the results can then be ignored on the grounds that the significance of these results to humans is unknown. Did you catch that, kids? If you didn't, let's just take a look at that statement again. The drug companies, they come up with a drug and they call it Ritalin. And they say, well, we got to test this drug. And so they get some rats and they feed this drug to these rats in doses that kill them. And so they got 100 rats and they shoot them up with this and every rat dies. And they say, okay, and they write that down. They say, well, 1 gram of this stuff kills a rat. All right. So then they cut it down to 0.5 gram and then only 50 rats die. And then they cut it down to 0.25 gram. and only 12 rats die. And so they cut it down, you know, and cut it down until finally no rats die. Then they say, well, this is a safe dose. Then they take a look at the rat's body weight, and they take a look at a human's body weight, and they say, okay, well, then based upon our experiments with these animals, this is a safe dose. All right, so then they carry it a step further, and they continue with their tests, and they watch the rats, and some of these rats develop tumors. Okay, so now the rats are developing tumors, and they're feeding these rats Ritalin, and they got another controlled batch of rats over here that they're feeding the same diet, but they don't give them any Ritalin, and they watch these rats, and they find that the male rats that are on Ritalin are developing these tumors. Not every rat, but some of the rats are, and they take that percentage. And then when you get this kind of adverse result, you come back and say, well, it caused cancer in these rats, but we don't know whether it causes cancer in humans. All right, now that's one result. On the other hand, if they feed this drug to the rats and it doesn't cause tumors and they can't see any other adverse reactions, then they report it to the FDA and say, well, in our laboratory experiments, we fed Ritalin to rats and we fed a control group without Ritalin, the same diet, and they all came out the same, and Ritalin is perfectly safe because it didn't cause tumors. Now, that's a double standard of hypocrisy that defies description, now, isn't it? But that's the scientific method, and that's the method, that's the science that Americans have subscribed and signed on to. We love it. In this country, we swear by it, as evidenced by the fact that 12% of America's children are on Ritalin. Isn't that special? Now, and more, as time progresses, I mean, if 12% of our students, 12% of our children are on Ritalin, wouldn't 24% be even better? If Ritalin is good at 12%, my God, it would be twice as good if we had twice as many children on. Now, once we get up to 25%, are we going to say, oh my God, look at the death, the suicides, and look at the stunted growth and the other 35 side effects, let's quit using Ritalin? No. Hell, if this Ritalin is good for 25% of the people, can you imagine how good it would be for half? So they'll pass legislation. They'll mandate that every child be allowed to have Ritalin. They start off with being allowed to. Then after they get half the students on this Ritalin, they'll come back and they'll say, well, my God, if it's so good for half, it'd be even better for everybody. Then they'll mandate it for everybody. That's what they did with vaccinations. So now with vaccinations, we have autism and SID. And I told you about that SID that they experimented over in Japan. And they found that if you take children 2 months old to 2 years, and you give them their vaccinations, just like they do in America and Europe and every place else, they come down with a certain percentage of SID deaths. That's sudden infant death syndrome. And then they got to thinking, well, let's try this. Let's postpone the vaccinations from 2 months to 2 years. So in Japan, instead of vaccinating their kids at 2 months, 6 months, a year old, year and a half, they wait until they're 2 years old, then they start the vaccination program, and they find that the average number of children dying in Japan dropped by half. And now it hasn't dawned on anybody yet that if you eliminated vaccination, you might eliminate SID. But we do know that if you postpone until age two, you can reduce it by 50%. Well, what would happen if you expanded that and you didn't vaccinate them until they were 4 years old, or 8 years old, or 16 years old? See, it's a cause and effect relationship. It's a choice that people have to make. And most people make the choice without having all of the data, without having complete information, which is why here on the Law Hour, we like to put out the other half of the story. You've heard about Ritalin. You heard about how good it is. You heard about how safe it is, how effective it is, how millions of children are on it, and your kid could probably benefit from it. You heard that story. That's what you get in the mainstream press. Now, the other side of the story isn't quite as good. Now, you see, when you only hear one half of the story, you don't have to be bothered by making decisions, complicated, life-threatening decisions. We can eliminate that. We can get real touchy-feely, and we can make the decision, and everybody else is doing it, and so therefore it must be a safe decision for me to make because everybody else is making it. And God forbid that I should make a decision and be wrong, and then suffer the side effects. But now all of you parents out there that have children with autism, or all of you parents out there that have lost a child to sudden infant death syndrome, that was tragic, wasn't it? See, to the rest of us, it's just a statistic. But to you, personally, live and direct, that was a crushing personal disaster. Now, the last thing you want is for some clown to come on the air and say, well, it was totally preventable, and you could have solved that problem if you'd have known this, that, and another thing. And so people don't want to believe the truth because it's disconcerting. It shows that I made a mistake, I made a bad decision, and I had to pay the penalty for it. Nobody wants to hear that. That's why our program is so unpopular. I mean, you don't want to tell people the truth. My God, it upsets people. Truth is upsetting. We don't want to hear that. So we blot that out, and we listen to Bob Schieffer and the 6 o'clock news, and they tell us about cancer research and the promise of a cancer cure. And that appeals to all of us. That's what we want. We want to eat pig and shellfish, and we don't want to get cancer. We want to go to Flo's Whorehouse, but we don't want to get venereal disease. Unfortunately, in the real world, there's the potential of venereal disease down at the whorehouse. That's just part and parcel with the ritual of Flo's. And you have to make a decision. Now, some of us woke up, you know, at some late date and said, I don't think I'll go back to Flo's. Some of us made a decision, said, I think I'll quit smoking. Some of us decided, hey, I think I'll quit drinking, or at least drinking to the level that I have become accustomed to. And then others of us, you know, we got off of meat altogether. You know, vegetarians, they take a look at meat and they say, well, we can see that meat causes all these diseases. And they're not whistling Dixie through a straw hat. They just don't have all the facts. But they got more facts than the guy that's out here eating pig and fat. And so we all of us arrive at conclusions, and we've all got opinions. You've got an opinion about fat and blood. You've got an opinion about religion and politics and economics and drugs. You know, everybody's got their opinions. But now, are your opinions based upon science? Are they based upon revelation? Are they based upon any facts? Or is there any real hard evidence over here that we could measure your belief against or your experiences against and come to a conclusion and then make a decision that might benefit us or benefit our children or benefit somebody else in the future? So when I took a look at people dying and I took a look at the lung cancer rates and I looked at the statistics and the numbers, my conclusion was I should quit smoking. Now, I'm not opposed to you people that smoke. Hell, if you want to smoke, get after it. I smoked for 9 years and enjoyed every puff. I think smoking is intensely pleasurable. Hell, I think Flo's girls are intensely pleasurable. There's all kinds of things out there that produce intense pleasure but kill you. So there again is your decision time. You got to decide. Ritalin probably produces intense pleasure, especially for teachers and social workers and parents, and they got this kid calmed down. But, you know, there's some side effects that come from that. Now, if your kid dies on you, that's going to be a tragedy. And there's a story in here of a 14-year-old boy that died from Ritalin use. It's not common. Most kids don't die from Ritalin. Most people don't die from cocaine use. You know, once in a while, there's a John Belushi, you know, that he overdoses on some drug. You know, I think in his case it was heroin. It happens, you know. But, you know, by and large, you know, people that are using these drugs, they don't overdose on them and they don't kill themselves. But once in a while, that happens. And you need to be aware of that. Do you want to accept that risk? It's like flying airplanes under bridges and power lines, you know. There's an inherent risk that goes along with that kind of behavior. Now, I've had people flying with me when I suggested that we fly under the Golden Gate Bridge. They just, you know, practically jumped out of the airplane. Hell no, I don't want to fly under the bridge. Oh, okay. But the same guy would sit back and light up a cigar or light up a cigarette. He didn't have any qualms about lung cancer, but good boy, flying under the bridge, you know that? And that's a big bridge. And when you get down to some littler bridges, you know, that have less clearance, you know, that's where the real test comes in. I sometimes fear that people do not have sufficient facts to actually weigh the chances or the percentages or the hazards that they're getting involved in. You know, your chances of dying from a terrorist attack are so remote, it's something like less than winning the lottery. Your chances of winning the lottery are better than getting killed by a terrorist. But people are terrified of terrorists, and they buy lottery tickets. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but then that's the way life is. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And if you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Don't blame them, blame me. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our webpage at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Talking about Ritalin, R-I-T-A-L-I-N, it's a brand name for Novartis. Other drug companies also have other brand names for their drugs. One of my students, who happens to be a druggist, informed me that drugs like heroin are the street names. That's the slang term that they use for the brand names that the drug manufacturers turn out. And there's a name, now I can't pronounce these names and I don't remember or know them, but he told me that you can buy cocaine, the same stuff, only in purer form and better and probably heavier duty stuff, over the counter with a prescription from your doctor. So if you want cocaine, you can get it from your doctor. You want heroin, they've got a name for it, and you can get that. Marijuana, you can get marijuana. Now, it costs six times more to get legal marijuana, cocaine, and heroin, which is probably why the illegal varieties down on the street corner are so popular. Now, I don't think doctors are opposed to giving people cocaine and heroin. I don't know. I haven't been to my doctor and said, yeah, I'd like a hit of heroin. Why don't you give me a prescription? But, you know, we have things, uppers and downers. You know, these uppers and downers you hear him talk about all the time. And Valium, you know, there's one. Valium is a name that he said. You know, that's a, I don't know if it's cocaine or if it's a heroin. And they have different concoctions that they make up, and they sell it under different names. And they got these sleep medicines. You know, you want to go to sleep, well, you take heroin. That's the way you go to sleep. And so they say, well, it's a non-narcotic, and it's a non-habit-forming. And then when you read the label, it says, well, now all these sleep medications can be habit-forming. And so make sure you consult your doctor. Don't consult Joe on the street corner. He's competition. No, don't go to him. Come to Rexall, come to your doctor, get legal drugs from a prescription from your doctor. So the doctor is really a drug pusher in our society. That's a drug pusher. But he's a legal drug pusher, and he's authorized. He's licensed, he's bonded, and he's insured to prescribe drugs of the highest purity and quality. And so I wouldn't doubt but what the heroin, cocaine, and marijuana that you get from your doctor or the Ritalin or the other drugs that you get are a higher quality, purer, and probably better for you than the drugs that you get from Joe down on the street corner, but you pay six times more for them. Now, keep this in mind. The question here is a very simple one. If the experiments on mice, remember we were talking about these mice, which showed that Ritalin causes cancer were of value, then why is the drug still available on prescription for children? And if the experiments can safely be ignored on the grounds that animals are so different to human beings that the results are irrelevant, then why in the hell are the tests done in the first place? If tests done on rats prove to be negative, and then you don't use that as a guide to your behavior, then why even have these animal experiments? I think that makes all the sense in the world. Now, there's ignorance and a lot of misplaced trust. You know, my own feeling is the people who told you that Ritalin is very safe are either unable to read or they are too lazy to do any research into the safety of a product which they are recommending with so much enthusiasm for their children. Now, years of experience mean that I am not in the slightest bit surprised to find such crass stupidity exhibited by social workers. I underlined the word social workers in this report. And I want to report to you that social workers are professionals. They're people who have gone to college and they have letters after their name and they're real smart people. They're smarter than those of us that don't have letters after our names. You know, we're just plumbers and carpenters and electricians and truck drivers and Sally soccer moms. So we're not very smart. But these social ladies are very smart people because they've got letters after their names. But I want to point something out that I don't think the average Joe Sixpack is aware of. That there's a pecking order here of intelligence in America. Now, in India, they call it a caste system. You know, you got real smart people, and they're in this caste, and you got little dumber people, and they're in another caste, and they got this caste system. We Americans are just really opposed to that. We just really oppose this caste system in India. We don't know anything about it. We don't understand it, but we do know that we're opposed to it. Okay. Well, now look, the best and the brightest students in America go to medical school. So when you go into the medical school, you find that the average intelligence they test these kids, you know, before they accept them into medical school or law school or engineering school or whatever school they're going to, they test these kids. And they find that the people who go into the medical schools are the best and the brightest. And they'll just use a number. They score 140, okay, on their intelligence. All right, then there's some dumber people. They're not quite as smart. They'll score under 35. And those guys, they go to lawyer school. They go to law school. So the lawyers aren't quite as smart as the doctors. And then the next group is called the business school. And so they score about 130. And then the next group is called the engineering students, and so they score about 125. Smart people. I mean, the rest of us guys are down here 75, 80, 90, something like that. People like me, you know, dummies. And so we're down below 100. But these smart people, like doctors, they score 140, 135 for lawyers, 130 for business, and 125 for engineering. And then come the scientists. And they score about 120, well above average, real smart people, right? Not as smart as doctors, not as smart as engineers, not as smart as lawyers, but they're smart people, and they become anthropologists. And all of these various scientists and then astronomers and, you know, all these kind of guys. And then the sciences come in here. And then we get these guys into science over here, you know, and they make space probes and they work for NASA and all kinds of crazy things like that. They score about 150, something on that order. All right. Now, where do you think the teachers and the social workers come in? What do you think the average social worker's IQ is? Okay. Well, they're smart people. I don't deny that. And the teachers come next at about 110. And then come the social workers at about 105. And what this means is this. You come in here and you take your SAT test and you take all of your exams and you want to go to medical school. And then they look at you and they say, no, you're not smart enough to go to medical school. But, you know, you're smart enough to become a scientist. You're smart enough to become a businessman. You're smart enough to become something else. And so there's this pecking order. The best and the brightest become doctors and the dumbest and the slowest become social workers. Then there's this marriage between the social worker and the doctor. Now, the doctor has to prescribe the Ritalin, and the social worker has to sell it. So the social worker, who gets her cue from the teacher. So you got this teacher over here. She's not the best and the brightest. She couldn't make medical school. She couldn't make law school. She couldn't make business school. She couldn't make engineering school or science school, but she could make teaching. And she wanted to make a living, and so she needed a job, and so she went to teaching school, and so she got her teaching credential, and she's out here teaching. Now, she doesn't know how to teach. I mean, hell, if she knew how to teach, or if she had the capacity or the ability, she wouldn't have ADHD. I went to third grade. I had a third grade teacher. Her name was Mrs. Wiles. She didn't have any Ritalin, and she had kids that were jumping up and acting rowdy. And she was an old lady in her 60s. I don't know exactly how old she was, but, you know, when an old lady is wearing platform shoes and got gray hair, she's an old lady. I'm 8 years old, and I saw her on more than one occasion come over, grab a kid, shake him until his teeth rattled, and set him down in his chair very hard and tell him to shut up. Now, I never saw a kid talk back to her. I was pretty intimidated by her. You didn't see me jumping up and saying, hey, why don't you come on over here, old lady, let me take you on. You think you're so damn tough? I never said that to Mrs. Wiles, not at age 8 in the third grade. And I told you about the kid. She picked him up by his ear, just yarded him right down to the principal's office. Kid's crying and yelling and screaming. I take it that the pain in his ear was substantial. He was yelling and screaming every step of the way. So there was a time in America's education system when the teachers could keep control in the classroom without cocaine. So now, when the social worker and the teacher, the two dumbest people in the professional hierarchy of the caste system of America, suggest that we get Ritalin for this kid, they got to go to the smartest guy, the doctor, who's got a vested interest in prescribing the Ritalin because he makes money doing that. And then, of course, we got the scientist. He's the pharmacologist, or he's the something or other over here that's prescribing the Ritalin. All these people are making money off this. It's a moneymaker. So years of experience mean that I'm not in the slightest bit surprised to find such crass stupidity exhibited by social workers. They're the dumbest people in society. Well, the dumbest people in the professional society. But they're smarter than all us blue-collar workers. I mean, they don't work and they make more money than we do, so obviously they're smarter than we are. Now, I am, however, more surprised to find school teachers showing such a potent mixture of ignorance and misplaced trust. Some observers claim that Ritalin can be considered for a child when tests and clinical examinations have shown the existence of a clear neurological disorder with abnormal brain wave patterns. Psychiatrists and psychologists, health advisors, teachers, general practitioners, and parents should, it is said, all be considered before considering treatment. Even the company selling Ritalin says that Ritalin treatment is not indicated in all children with this syndrome, and the decision to use the drug must be based on the physician's evaluation of the child's history and the duration and the severity of the symptoms. However, despite this, when a team of researchers from the United Nations International Narcotics Control Board examined the records of 400 pediatricians who had prescribed Ritalin for their patients, they found that half of the children who had been diagnosed as suffering from MBD or ADD or ADHD or whatever you want to call it, they had not been given psychological or educational testing before being given the drug. Now remember, the drug company says that you got this protocol you need to go through before you give this drug. You should consult with parents and doctors and social workers and teachers and psychologists and psychiatrists, and you should iron this thing out and make sure that this kid's really sick and he doesn't have all of these other ailments or symptoms and that he doesn't suffer from all of these side effects and he shouldn't be on this stuff for an extended period of time and he should be closely monitored. And 400 pediatricians never did any of that. And what's that tell you? What in the hell makes that so safe? They can't even follow the damn directions that their own protocols call for crying out loud. It's like a carpenter going out here and he builds a house without a level, a plumb bob, or a tape measure. What the hell is that all about? What the hell kind of a house are you going to have without a level or a tape measure, guys? And yet these guys called doctors, you know, with the high IQs and all these smart people with letters after their name, are prescribing Ritalin for your kid and assuring you, you plumbers and carpenters and electricians, assuring you people that it's safe, it's effective, and your kid needs it. And they don't even follow their own protocols. The United Nations concluded that frustrated parents, frustrated teachers, and greedy doctors were too quick to stick a label of ADD onto children with behavioral problems, or to be more accurate, to children whose behavior was annoying to those parents, teachers, and doctors. Now, that's what the real bottom line is. The behavior of these little bread snappers, these nasty little kids that have not been disciplined, educated, or trained in social behavior, act like little animals, which is what they are. Little animals, they act just like the animals that they see on Cartoon Time on Saturday morning. and they emulate that kind of behavior. So it would suggest to me that if you took them off the TV tube, took them off the Cokes, and if they quit sucking on the sugar, and you gave them some vitamins and minerals, slap them up alongside the head a couple of times like we used to do back in the 30s, you'd probably come up with a pretty good kid. I mean, that's what we did back then, and we came up with pretty good kids without drugs. But that is unacceptable behavior over here. We can't discipline these kids. We let them grow like weeds in the cracks of a sidewalk. I mean, if you had a dog that was urinating and defecating on your floors, I mean, you know, you'd throw that dog outside. Well, some people would. I've been into a few people's houses over here, weren't exactly. Their pets weren't any better trained than their children. But most people, you know, most people can train their dogs, you know, to do it on the paper in the box or outside. They can't train their kids, but they can train a dog. So it's worth remembering that although doctors and parents and teachers have for over 30 years now been enthusiastically recommending the use of Ritalin and similar drugs in the treatment of these MBD, ADHD, ADD diseases or alleged diseases, there's still a number of unanswered questions. We still don't know whether the drug works, nor do we know whether it causes any permanent long-term damage. We do not know whether the listed potential side effects do more damage than any possible good that the drug might do. And perhaps most astonishing of all, despite the fact that millions of children have been diagnosed as suffering from ADHD or ADD or MBD or something else, and treated with these powerful mind-altering drugs, we do not even know whether any of these conditions or hyperactivity even exist. It's just a figment of our imagination that we've gone out and sold so that we can sell drugs. Now, back in 1970, the Committee on Government Operations in the U.S. House of Representatives studied the use of behavioral modification drugs on children. At that time, in 1970, about 300,000 children a year in the United States were being given these drugs, and the point was then made that hyperactivity was considered a disease because it makes it difficult for schools to be run like maximum security prisons for the comfort and convenience of the teachers and the administrators who work in them, unquote. Let me give you that one again. Come right out of Congress. And they said, we got 300,000 children a year in the United States that are being given these drugs. And the point was then made that hyperactivity is considered a disease because it makes it difficult for schools to be run, quote, from Congress, quote, like maximum security prisons for the comfort, turn the page, and convenience of the teachers and administrators who work in them, unquote. God, that's quite an admission. Now, since then, the only thing that has changed is that the popularity of Ritalin has continued to rise, and rise inexorably. Prescribing Ritalin is, in my view, authorized child abuse on a massive, indeed a global scale. But it is clear that the prescribing of these powerful mind-altering drugs for small children is big business. It is a multi-billion dollar a year business. And in the United States, the use of antidepressants and stimulants among toddlers aged 2 to 4 years old tripled between 1991 and 1995. Remember I told you about the terrible twos? I had little children, and all little children go through what they call the terrible twos. And you spank them when they go through these hysterical hissy fits. And they quit doing that. Discipline, that's what that's called. The period between birth and 4 years of age is a time of great change in the human body. Most importantly, it's a time when the brain is maturing. Now, God only knows what effect these drugs have on those tiny developing brains. Let me underline it. God only knows what effect these drugs have on those tiny developing brains. Nobody has a clue. Nobody has a clue. We've been experimenting for 40 years giving these drugs to kids. Kids are out committing suicide. We've got all kinds of problems that we never had before. It doesn't solve the problem that it's allegedly designed to solve, but what doesn't deter us from using the stuff and using more of it and using it on more children? The time will come when every child in America will be on Ritalin. Well, that's the goal. Ritalin is now widely prescribed for toddlers. Toddlers! Ritalin, widely prescribed for toddlers. Got it down to 2 years now. So are many other antidepressants, stimulants, and powerful drugs. And remember, the typical symptoms of this alleged disease include restlessness and inattentiveness. So if you got a kid that's restless or inattentive, give them Ritalin. That's the mantra. Now, I'm delighted that my protests and complaints about these absurd and obscene prescribing habits have drawn a number of vicious complaints from doctors. Please complain more, docs. And in my view, every doctor who prescribes such drugs for little children with this alleged ADHD should be defrocked, given a good thrashing with genetically engineered stinging nettles, and then forced to emigrate to the United States, where they belong. So there's that report. The report on Ritalin. Now that's just one report. I got a couple more here I want to share with you. I'm almost out of time, so I'm gonna give you a little teaser here. Our 14-year-old son died from Ritalin use. That's the headline on the second report. That's where we'll start next time. Our 14-year-old son died from Ritalin use. Now I know all these kids that are in these shootouts in the schools. Here in the United States over the past, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, we've had a number of school shootings. Now, from my sources and from what I'm reading and what my reports indicate to me, every single school shooting has been accompanied with some form of psychotropic drug therapy used on the shooters. Everyone. Now, if you know of any exception to that rule, where some kid was out here shooting up the school and killed a bunch of people, and he was not on Ritalin or Demitrol or on some other upper or downer or drug therapy, would you call me and let me know? You know, give me some facts. You know, when you do that, don't just call up and say, well, I heard Bob told Sally, who told Sam, who heard it from Tom, who maybe got it from USA Today. I mean, give me some names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, would you? Something, you know, hard. Didn't have to be, you know, cement hard, but, you know, give me something that's got some substance, a little meat on it, even a rib, you know, that's got just a couple of bites. And tell me that, yeah, some kid over here killed another kid, and he wasn't on any drugs. Isn't that surprising? Because, you know, I came out of the public school system. I was institutionalized for 12 years in that public school system, and there wasn't a single school shooting. And we weren't concerned about kids, you know, being wild and shooting people and robbing and raping and one thing and another. You know, we had some bad kids in school. You know, kids that chewed gum and threw paper on the floor. You know, really, really badasses. But we didn't have anybody running around there shooting people on the street corners. At least not that I heard of. Then we didn't have anybody on drugs either. Well, other than tobacco, all the kids that I ran around with were smoking and drinking. But we weren't out robbing banks and kidnapping people and knocking old ladies over the head and trying to get enough money for another hit of crack or cocaine or something like that or heroin. We heard about it. There were some people, you know, that were on heroin and crack, but not, you know, not on the scale that we see today. So we'll take a look next time at our 14-year-old son who died from Ritalin use, and we'll take a look at maybe we could learn a lesson from that guy so that that doesn't happen to our kid. So until then, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. It's an easy one, georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. No children allowed, but on compact disc for adults. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.